I think that everybody talks about race and racism wrong. Everybody except for me. I talk about it in the right way. I talk about it in the best way. And everybody should take notes from me. So what I mean by that is basically like this. When you talk about race and racism, talking about white racism, black racism, Asian racism, Hispanic racism, whatever it is, you have to talk about it with a tremendous amount of empathy, meaning that when someone has been on the receiving end of racism, you have to actually listen and take it in. You can't get all weird and defensive. And I'm even talking about white people. You ever hear about some white person being on the receiving end of some kind of racial discrimination? I have. I heard it today. And so everybody's talking about it wrong. Because I think we only focus on a very kind of narrow window of what racism actually looks like or what racism actually sounds like. I listened to the Todd Herman show this morning, and he played a clip of a Loudoun County School Board meeting. And I was thinking to myself, oh my God, this is some really, really heady racial nonsense that they are trying to fill these kids with. This is some really, really disgusting language that they are trying to fill these young people's brains with. And I don't think we realize how subtle the difference is between actually talking about something like critical race theory is, which is this kind of really heady academic, lots of kind of data points looking at critical legal theory, critical race theory, how these things intersect with each other. Taking that model, and then the model that we see being pushed on these poor kids at this within the school district in Iowa, it's really, really, really disturbing. And I think that we should call it out as we see it. Again, this is a Loudoun County School Board, and they are at the center of controversy surrounding critical race theory. They were silenced. These parents were giving speeches as to why they were protesting critical race theory. They were giving these really strong speeches as to why they think that their children should be not be taught this nonsense. And they were shut down. They were totally shut down. Now, we've talked about critical race theory before, but we'll go over it again just really quick so we can get a refresher on critical race theory before we go into this audio clip. Critical race theory comes from critical legal theory. And the idea was, from back in like the 70s and the 80s, the idea was is that let's analyze the way that certain systems out there disproportionately affect members of minority communities. Black people, Hispanic people, Asian people. So critical legal theory would look at something like the internment of Japanese people during World War II. And they would ask the question, is that legal to do? Is it legal to incarcerate an entire ethnicity of an entire group of people based on ethnicity? And they would ask legal questions around it. Now, we now know in 2021 that, yeah, no, that's absolutely disgusting. Of course you shouldn't do that. That's gross. Part of the reason that that has entered our general thought as Americans is in large part due to something like critical legal theory. Moreover, if we look at something like the war on drugs, we look at how the Nixon administration put forth the war on drugs, we can see clearly how it disproportionately affected members of minority communities, Hispanic people, black people, so on and so forth. So it's not hard to see the benefit of something like critical legal theory or critical race theory in that way. Now, when it becomes perverted and when it becomes gross and when it becomes something that's disgusting, is when it is solely targeted at one group of people. And right now, the way that critical race theory is being used is to bludgeon white people, and it's really gross. You see, previously, critical legal theory was focusing on the state, was focusing on government. How does government affect members of minority communities? Because the way that government treats the people that it hates is eventually the way that it will treat other people within that society. I'll rephrase, but the way that government will treat the lowest levels of society, the poor minority communities, is the way that they will treat the rest of society. So the idea basically goes that the way that government we would had interned those Japanese people during World War II, if they were willing to do it to those Japanese people under some kind of emergency proclamation, that they could then go ahead and do it to you as a citizen and as a white person. And if you don't believe me, I've got a huge piece of evidence. It's called The Last Year of Your Life, as to how government can come in and literally force you to stay in your home. So again, we can see here that critical race theory or critical legal theory is actually really quite applicable. But when I saw the breakdown from this school district, when I saw the stuff that they were talking about, they have a little triangle diagram. And you can go find it over at Todd Herman's show notes on My Northwest. I really recommend that you take a listen to Todd Herman's show, by the way. It's a great show. And he's also got great sources. And every single day, he will list his sources to the stuff that he talks about. It's a huge benefit to you if you are trying to shore up your arguments or if you're actually trying to send links to people. So a special shout out to Todd for doing that for us. But he links this Twitter page from the school district, and they have a little graphic. It says examples of racism across levels. It's a triangle. At the top of the triangle, it says overt white supremacy, socially unacceptable. And then there is a line. And then underneath that line, there is something that says covert white supremacy, socially acceptable. Now, what do they label as overt white supremacy? Lynching, hate crimes, swastikas, the N-word, KKK, burning crosses, racial slurs, racial jokes, neo-Nazis. Half of those things are not relegated to just white supremacy. Hate crimes happen to everybody. Correct, or am I insane? Because if we look at the rates of hate crimes against Asian people, specifically in San Francisco or through New York, it's through the roof. And if you look at the data as to who is actually attacking these Asian people, these citizens, these U.S. citizens that happen to be of Asian descent. According to the DOJ, it's something like 75% black people. So is that overt white supremacy? Is that, I have no idea what the people over at this the Loudoun School District are trying to say, but that is a hate crime. If you hit somebody in the back of the head because they are Asian, that is a hate crime, according to the Department of Justice. Not according to the Department of Jack Stein, that's according to the Department of Justice. Racial slurs are not relegated to just white people. Racial slurs can be used against everybody, anybody. So what is this? What is this? It's really quite racist jokes. I mean, is that overt white supremacy? I mean, yeah, sure, white people use racist jokes, but everybody uses racist jokes. Some people are just casually bigoted, much like myself. So this kind of delineation that they are trying to make, this demarcation as to what white supremacy is and what is not, is actually false. The premise that they start with is entirely false in this little graph that they put out there. So what is socially acceptable white supremacy, you might ask? Well, what is at the top of the pyramid but make America great again? Aha! We finally found the racist, y'all. We finally discovered that if you use the phrase make America great again, listen up, y'all. If you use the phrase make America great again, you should know that you're engaging in covert white supremacy. Socially acceptable white supremacy, as a matter of fact. So if you're a black man out there and you're wearing a MAGA hat, guess what? You're a white supremacist. If you're out there and you're an Asian man and you're wearing a Make America Great Again, guess what? You're a racist. You're a white supremacist. And you know who says that? You know who says that? The Loudoun School District in Iowa. That's who says it. And they're 100% right about it. Because you're a white supremacist. I mean, it's garbage, right? It's complete and total garbage. But this is what they're trying to show these kids, and it gets actually really dangerous when you pump kids' heads with this kind of information and you don't offer them a counterpoint, you don't offer them a counterbalance. I'm not objecting to students being taught this. I'm objecting to not offering kids the counterpoint to this. In college, when people talk about CRT, when they talk about critical race theory, they offer people, by and large, they offer the students the counterpoint to it. They demonstrate how CRT fails in many ways to articulate accurately what is actually going on in a society. They let everybody know that this is a tool, this is a lens. It's not the end-all be-all, and there are many different ways at looking at a society. So what else do these fine people say is covert white supremacy, by the way? Well, it's Eurocentric curriculum, English-only initiative, expecting POC to teach white people. Wow, I had no idea. You mean to tell me that when I was in college and I had black professors that that was somehow engaging in white supremacy? Wow, I had no idea. Blaming the victim, color blindness, tokenism, which is a horrible phrase, by the way. This is the sad part about all this. There are examples within this that we could say are examples of covert white supremacy. There are for sure examples in here, but I'll tell you this right now. It's not MAGA, it's not Make America Great Again, and it's certainly not English-only incentives, and it's certainly not expecting persons of color to teach white people. That is ridiculous. The points that they do make as to covert white supremacy that I think are really good ones, Confederate flags, housing discrimination, school to prison pipeline, everything that is actually backed up, either in anecdotal data or actual data, those are the things that I could get on, those are for sure things that I could get on board with. If you're walking around with a Confederate flag, if you're walking around with the rebel flag, unironically in 2021, there's something else going on with you, and I have no sympathy for you. Take the L. The Confederacy lost, my dude. They go on to say the denial of white privilege. Okay, great. This is my favorite one. You're saying that for me or for Sarah, we are a biracial couple, well, you are telling me that if we deny the fact that we have white privilege, that we are somehow engaging in white supremacy or covert white supremacy? It's amazing. And the one that really gets me in this little diagram that they have that they shared with these kids is, it says, assuming that good intentions are enough. Assuming that good intentions are enough. Well, who is assuming that? You know, according to the most recent Pew Research data, something like 85% of Americans say that they would protest against racism if they were confronted by it, meaning that they would engage in some kind of activity if they were confronted by racism. And in fact, we saw that. We actually saw people going out last summer. The protesters who were peaceful, and we saw people engaging in that kind of activity. Now, again, it was perverted and it was ruined because people were going around and they were burning buildings and they were looting. But that's a separate question altogether. Getting back to the original kind of idea of this and the kind of original premise around this is that these parents went out of their way to say, hey, wait a minute, we don't like this. Listen to us. We are going to tell you how we feel about our kids being taught this kind of garbage. And what were they met with by the school board, you wonder? What do you think that they were met with when they went up there and tried to explain to the school board that they should not be indoctrinating kids in this way?
This board has a dark history of suppressing free speech. They caught you red-handed with an enemies list to punish opponents of critical race theory. You're teaching children to hate others because of their skin color, and you're forcing them to lie about other kids' gender. I am disgusted by your bigotry.
Joe Mobley to be followed by Donna Russell.
Okay, so they cut him off. Now let's not, the whole gender thing, this guy's clearly wrong about that. Okay, let's get off the trans thing for just a quick second. More importantly, the whole race thing is what really gets me on this. And this is what I mean when I said at the beginning of this segment as to why that this is so disturbing, is that critical race theory has positioned itself in such a way that if you even begin to question it, if you even begin to say, hey, wait a minute, what's going on here? You can be castigated as a racist. And they will for sure say that about you. And it's a shame. You know, it's a real shame. And every time CRT comes up, it's such a shame to me and it's such a disappointment to me because I've written extensively about it. I have had, I don't know how many hundreds of hours of conversation around it. I have tried to bring it out and to make it less of a heady academic theory and actually lay it out for people and say, look at this tool that we could use to actually analyze the history of the United States. And it has become a tool, as I mentioned previously, to literally bludgeon any dissent to things like accusing people of being white supremacists. It's become a tool to silence people, as we just saw in this school board meeting, where people just get shut up. They just get, boom, cut his mic, shut him off. He's no longer allowed to protest this. He's no longer allowed to talk about this. And what's going to happen as a result of this? This is the real shame of it again. This whole thing with CRT over the last 2 weeks has just been so disappointing to me, again, as someone who comes from academia and as someone who has studied this. What's going to happen? Parents are going to start taking their kids out of school, out of public schools, because they don't want their kids to be taught this nonsense. Or even if they do, they want their kids to be offered a counterpoint to this. And they're going to be able to want to instill values in their children that CRT could have potentially taught them, which is that we don't discriminate against people based on race. And we look out for systems of oppression like, for example, the war on drugs, the prison industrial complex, the policing industrial complex, so on and so forth. We look out for these things and we try to ensure that they do not happen in a civil society. And we look out for things like districting and redlining and all this other kind of stuff because we want to live in a beautiful multicultural society. So we do actually have to look out for this and call it out when we see it. That's what could have happened. That would have been a great utopia for everybody to live in, right? But instead, now what we get is we get a school board attempting to silence people for speaking up against it. And as a result, again, people are going to leave. People are going to take their kids out of school. They won't learn this kind of stuff. They won't be able to analyze this kind of stuff because their parents are going to want to take completely hide them from. I would be terrified of it if I didn't know what it actually was. This version of it would scare the bejesus out of me. I wouldn't want my kids anywhere near it. And then we're just going to get further isolated and further separated from each other. And it's just going to be an absolute nightmare. So I recommend to people that going forward, we try our very best to talk about these kinds of issues with a tremendous amount of empathy and a tremendous amount of kindness and just take a step back, take a page out of your Uncle Jay's playbook and recognize that there's a way to talk about race and racism in the United States in such a way that is actually beneficial and constructive as opposed to destructive. We'll take a really quick break. When we get back, we're going to be going over that Supreme Court case with that young woman who won today on the basis of free speech. We'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Cairo Night. So Mr. Billy Sunshine could not be with us tonight. So in his honor, we will be talking about a very difficult issue that he would have likely disagreed with me on. So the Supreme Court has decided to rule in favor of a Pennsylvania cheerleader who was suspended from serving on a cheer team for having some very strong language towards the cheer team. Her name was Brandy Levy. And so this is basically the way the story goes. So she is told when she is 14 years old that she cannot serve on the varsity team, even though she is quite skilled. She is very upset about this. And so she goes on to Snapchat and she says some very strong things about the cheer team and the softball team and the school. She's with a friend of hers. They're being silly little kids. Again, she's 14 years old. School comes out and they say that she needs to be suspended as a result of that. And Brandy Levy and her family decided, no, 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 we are taking this all the way to the Supreme Court. So in the 8-1 opinion, the court upheld the lower court rulings against the high school's decision to suspend then-student Brandy Levy from her junior varsity cheerleading squad for 1 year over two Snapchat posts she sent while off school grounds. The thing that I don't understand is why is the school district even take it to this level? This is so petty. You are fighting against a teenage girl on Snapchat. This is ridiculous, by the way. So again, the justices had weighed whether a 1969 Supreme Court ruling, which held that public schools have the ability to regulate certain speech, applied in a case where the speech did not occur on campus. So again, she's off campus. She's complaining about the school. She's not happy with their decision. This is none of the school's business, and they would have never found out about it had another student not flagged those Snapchats and sent them off to the school. This is basically like, think about it like that. This is a journal that a friend writes in, or a person writes in, and then they show it to some of their friends, and then one of those people say, well, we need to report this person, even though it's nonviolent, she didn't threaten anybody, she didn't try to, she didn't even mention any names. And because the content was so provocative, that is why the school decided that they had to act. And why this is important as well is that a school, and schools in general, have become much more intrusive into their students' personal lives. Think about it, that now schools have great power over parents as well as students. We keep hearing about these cases of students complaining about the way that they are being treated inside of classrooms. We hear it in the state of Washington all of the time about students going to their parents and saying, I am being taught this thing about critical race theory, and I'm confused about it. Now, we've talked here on Cairo Nights about critical race theory I don't know how many times, but there are examples out there of students saying, I don't like being told that I'm bad because of the color of my skin. I don't agree with what I'm being taught. And when the parents go to complain about it, what does the school district say about them? They say that they are bigoted, and they say that they are racist, and all this other kind of stuff. There is an attack, I really do believe this, there is an attack on the sacred relationship between a child and their parent, and that is in large part due to the infiltration of public schools and institutions. I'll give you an example. You remember that young man from a while back who was autistic and mentally ill, and he ends up hospitalized, and his father goes to pick him up from the hospitals, and the doctors say, your son is actually transgender. And the father says, no, my son is just autistic and has a slew of mental health disorders. My son is not autistic. And these healthcare professionals came out and they said, no. Your son is transgender. And unless you agree to go through with the medical procedures that we recommend, we're going to report you to the state. And this guy had to fight to get his kid back, and he had to lie, and he had to say, oh yeah, I'm going to totally go through with the treatment, and then he booked it out of this. We all know the story, right? The point is look at how intrusive that institution was into that man's life, in the same way that this public school overstepped their boundaries and said, we need to regulate the speech of this little girl. We need to make sure that she does not say these things about our school. Now, Justice Thomas came out because he was the only member to dissent. Again, it was an 8-1 decision. So Justice Thomas basically said in his dissent that the majority fails to consider whether school, majority meaning the other members of the court. He says fails to consider whether schools often have, fails to consider whether schools often will have more authority, not less, to discipline students who transmit speech through social media. He goes on to explain that since speech made it through social media can be seen and shared on campus, it often will have a greater proximate tendency to harm the school environment than will an off-campus in-person conversation. That is a very, very slippery slope. Because again, my off-campus activity is in the same bracket of your out-of-work activity. And moreover, that if your employer disagrees with the fact that, I don't know, that you like going bungee jumping or that you have some weird kind of freaky relationship to some kind of, after dark club, if you catch my drift, that they can fire you as a result of your out of work activity. Again, that is an infringement on the relationship between you and that entity. There is no reason why the school should have gotten involved with this case whatsoever. And yet they continue to push it, and they continue to push it, and they continue to push it. It's not just this case. It's all cases involving kids in schools. I'll give you another example. We're talking about Broadview Thompson Elementary School a lot, and the homeless encampment outside of Broadview Thompson, and how the school is making the decision that they know what is best for those kids. Not you as a parent, but that school can say, we think it's perfectly acceptable for your children to be exposed to drug addiction, violence, homelessness, overdoses, so much so that when a guy walks around with a pellet gun, we will go to those parents with a straight face and say it's not that big of a deal. The reason that I am so critical of the public school system is because it could be a great institution. It could be a wonderful institution, but they are losing the thread as to where their authority begins and where it ends. And I'll tell you where it ends. It ends outside the boundaries of the school district. It ends right there. They already have a tremendous amount of power as mandated reporters when it comes to kids who are being abused or kids who are being hurt or kids who are subjected to violence. They are mandated reporters. At that point in time, the state comes in and takes over. When they themselves decide that they are the authority, that is when the water gets all muddy. That is when it gets awkward. That is when it gets weird. My suggestion to schools is to try to foster a more healthy relationship with your community and listen to the parents. Listen to the concerns of the parents. Again, we see this across the nation right now, where parents are going to school board meetings and they are saying, we don't like CRT, or at least we don't like what we think it is, and we don't like the way that it's being taught to our children. We don't like this kind of language being taught to our children. We have to hold these people in check and say that you do not have the authority to run my child's life. And by proximity, by the way, to use the language of Justice Thomas, by proximity, my life. They are my kids. You teach my kids about the Civil War. You teach my kids about arithmetic. You teach my kids about Abraham Lincoln. And I'll do everything else. Thank you very much. We'll take a really quick break. We'll check in with Shane right after this.
You look at me and I begin to melt. Just like the snow when a ray of sun is. No need to ask, he's a smooth operator.
All right, welcome back to Cairo Nights. What we like to do now is we like to get Shane Peterson involved because Shane has got a brain unlike anybody I've ever met before in my life. And so we're going to go into Shane's world. Now, the fun of this is that I have no idea. Shane, can you confirm this for the people? I have no idea what you're going to talk about. I have no idea what the topic is. I have no idea what you're going to address. Can you reaffirm for everybody out there that I literally have no idea what's about to happen?
Oh yeah, he has absolutely no idea what's about to happen, and this also might be the last Shane's World because this is a little bit of, one may say, a risque love story.
Oh, but, all right.
I'm ready. Jack? Okay,
I'm ready, buddy.
So I wanted to bring up an old article. This came from Channel 7 News Australia near the Gold Coast, and the title of the article is Gold Coast cop and model face court over drug charges after party bugged by police. So what happened is a well-known police officer, Zachary Maidment, a senior constable in the elite rapid action patrol unit, and a prominent model by the name of Tiana Hansen were caught in the act of doing drugs inside of a bugged party by police. Now, Miss Tiana Hansen, if I'm sure I'm saying this name right, but she is a well-known Playboy model and Maxim model. And this was, you know, published around October of 2020. And Jack, I just have one question for you.
Yeah.
Do you believe? Because today, fairy tale ending. Aussie cop who was arrested for doing cocaine off a Playboy model's naked body is now teaming up with her for an OnlyFans account, everybody. It's happening.
No.
We have reached a whole new low in the world of society. And this is what I wanted to talk about today. Because there's a lot to unfold and digest when you hear this story, Jack.
Yeah.
You know, you see an officer of the law who obviously went south or, you know, maybe, you know, just got caught up in the wrong crowd, ends up with a model, and now they're facing these drug charges. They have to, they've already gone to court. They have all these fees and fines, and they have records now. And I think, you know, Jack, thinking about it from, you know, a libertarian standpoint, when faced with financial trouble, being able to market yourself and create your own business and to be able to pay for things by doing yourself with consent of other people as well.
Of course.
To make money to help and solve intends to solve their problems. So, I mean, this is a perfect example of this, Jack. And I know that you disagree?
Okay, now here's a problem with this, Shane. Okay, let me take it from now. I'm libertarian on a great many things, but that does not necessarily mean that I condone many things. And here's what I'm just going to say, is that these are young people, and I understand that they are trying to make up a little bit of money here. But to live a let me do a little bit of this, Shane. It's important to live a good and virtuous life, and part of living a good and virtuous life is understanding that you have many skill sets. Some of us are radio broadcasters, some of us are teachers, some of us are adult film stars. But the point is that when you want to try to better your life, you have to strive for kind of a higher calling. And if you are involved in adult movies, you are not striving for that higher calling. You're actually kind of belittling yourself in so many ways. Some might say that you are desecrating your body in front of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, Shane Peterson. So I'm just saying that maybe we need to reconsider the decisions that some people make. And although we might say, yeah, we live in a libertarian society, that we certainly don't want to dive into licentiousness, Shane. We don't want to be licentious individuals, correct?
I don't know what licentious means.
we don't want to be iniquitous. We don't want to be too we don't want to engage in behaviors that might be considered to be harmful to our body and mind and spirit. How about that one?
Oh, okay. That makes sense. But I don't know, for some people it's one of those things where, you know, they can just make a bunch of money and just laugh their way all the way to the bank and it doesn't affect them. It's different for different people. But I saw this story and I just thought, this is just a little bit too wild to think about, because I see this happening even within circles that I've been around in school. I've seen three girls that I went to school with, either college or high school, that do the whole OnlyFans thing. And the weird part is that they can financially support themselves like just off of that while they've even gone to school and worked another regular job and just helped pay for the bills. And, you know, it's just using what the good Lord gave you. And the thing is that they weren't bothered by it. They weren't shamed by it. They set their price. And you know what? They made off like bandits in a lot of people's eyes. But you know what? They put themselves out there just like this beautiful couple is doing. And I think it's just a pretty great story. And you have a lot of good points, and that's the reason why I wanted to bring it up. I wanted to hear, you know, Uncle Jack's side of the story. Good old wholesome Uncle Jack telling me how it's got to be.
Yeah, you know, Uncle Jack says, Uncle Jack kind of points out, hey, listen, you know what? You can, it's your body. You know, you do what you want with your body. But Uncle Jack might recommend to these two young people, I'm looking at a picture of them right now, that they respect their bodies, and that the union between a man and a man, or a woman and a woman, or a they and a they, is a special thing. It's an adult thing, and not everybody needs to watch that. Not everybody, you don't need to put that on film and watch that, because, again, you don't know how you're going to feel in 6 months, a year, 3 years, 8 years. What if you want to have children? What if you... Anyway, Shane, we're running out of time. I'll tell you what we got to do. We'll take a really quick break. When we get back, Stacey Jo Ross is going to step in, and we are going to be talking about Britney Spears. Stick around. We'll be right back after this.